Dr. Diana Wiley here, your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. As we approach Thanksgiving, you'll be grateful for this program. I have a stellar panel consisting of Candida Royale, pioneer filmmaker of female-friendly erotic movies, Nina Hartley, porn star and sex educator, and Richard Pacheco, a star from the golden age of porn. And all three have worked together, and all three have fascinating books. So we're going to have quite a show. I hope you're all there. We're on separate landlines. Let's start with Candida Royale. Are you there, Candace?
I sure am.
Terrific. And Nina Hartley?
Hello, hello.
Oh, good. It's working. Richard Pacheco?
Yes, ma'am. How do?
Okay, great. Now, of course, all three of you have been guests on this program, but this panel is a first, and I think it's going to be revealing, and we're going to give people information because the sex industry is of course, a multi-billion-dollar business, and it's kind of a ubiquitous part of our society. It's also been a disavowed part of our society. So I have wonderful people today that are going to offer you some real information. Candida is your stage name, so to speak, but I'm kind of used to calling you Candace, so I may do that.
That's okay.
Okay, good. So I want to ask all of you this question, and because you all have fascinating stories about how you decided to get into the business. And, you know, I, of course, not only do I really like your book, How to Tell a Naked Man What to Do, but I even wrote a blurb for it. So, and we've been good friends for a long time, so it's really nice to have you on this program. So I know a little bit about this, but the listening audience would really like to know how did you get into this business?
Oh, gosh. I actually try to make, I'll make this very brief if I can, but I was a young wild thing living in San Francisco in the 70s, and I was doing underground theater, selling my artwork, but I needed extra money, and I went looking for nude modeling. I had certainly drawn from a lot of nude models, so I didn't think it was too horrible. And the agent asked me if I wanted to be in a porn movie, and I had never even seen one, so I kind of stormed out of his office in a huff. But my boyfriend at the time decided that it was a great idea for him. And I wasn't so sure about that, but I went to the film set, got a look. Actually, it was a film for Anthony Spinelli, who I know Richard talks a lot about in his book, and a wonderful director. And I went there to get a look of what it was really like, and I was really impressed. I thought it was very professional, and all the actors and actresses were gorgeous. There were scripts and big crew, and it wasn't this sleazy underground seedy thing I, like so many people, thought it was, and that convinced me that it was a great way to make extra money. And then it just kind of, you know, after a few years, it evolved into what I do now, which I don't know if you want me to just jump into this part, but, you know, I create erotica from a woman's point of view, and I'll just say that it occurred to me some years later that I didn't like the way the movies were made. There was no woman's voice, and I thought that this was something that could be so helpful for couples to watch and learn from if they were done with that in mind. And it eventually led me to create my own film company, and I'm sure we'll talk about that more later, but that's really how I got into the whole business.
And I have used your films in a clinical situation where I will loan one of your films to a couple to watch. And I remember you're saying in Amsterdam in 1991 that if a couple is not watching your film by the end, then you've done your work.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. I always tell them just, you know, kind of leave it where it is, which when, you know, on the tape with, in those days, and just come back and watch the rest another time. I took it as a high compliment. I was doing my job.
Yes. So, Nina Hartley, I also know a little bit about why you got into the business. I love how you put it. Go ahead, Nina, your turn.
Oh, well, I got into business because that's where the naked ladies were. I'm a
That's
couple
first,
only a
Nina.
Couple years. I'm only a couple years younger than Candace, and I first realized by the time I was 14, I knew that I was a bisexual person, an exhibitionist, and a voyeur. And if I knew then what I know now, I also would have been able to identify myself as queer and polyamorous. But I knew that I wasn't like other people. That I never fantasized him. I always fantasized about them. And very early on, the notion of a room full of naked people, yeah, that sounds fun, was part of my very early sexual ideation. Was just, yeah, it sounds great. So I sought out, this is Berkeley in the 70s, so I sought out written pornography, and of course Playboy magazine. I liked the ladies in Playboy magazine. I liked the written pornography, especially the very flowery purple prose Victorian written works. And I snuck into my first adult movie when I was 17, Autobiography of a Flea, because I had read the book and I wanted to see the movie. And that was when I was struck that that's what I wanted to do. And 8 years later, I found my way onto the set of Juliet Anderson's directorial debut, and mm-hmm. Educating Nina, and that was in 1984. Mm-hmm. I graduated nursing school in 85 and have been doing adult entertainment and education full-time ever since.
And you and Richard Pacheco, otherwise known as Howie Gordon, were both featured in a documentary, After Porn Ends, and I thought that was fascinating. And maybe this is a good segue into you, Richard Pacheco. Hello.
Hi.
And
what a thrill it is to be with three lovely ladies today.
Oh, you always say the right things. But I know you mean it. I know you do.
Yes, I do.
Yes. So,
if you'll allow me, I'd like to read you the two pages from my book, which answer your question better than I could off the cuff.
Okay, do what you like.
All right. The call came from my wife back when we were acting students with a group called the Blake Street Hawkeyes. We'd met some agents and gotten ourselves on some casting lists. This year was an agent calling for a feature film, and he said they were looking for women. As I was soon to learn, they were always looking for women. Carly, my wife, asked him to describe the film. He said it was a fun-filled romp through a hospital. Is this a porno film? She asked. Temporarily disarmed by the complete directness of her question, he fumped it and said, well, yes, it is. I learned that agents normally tried not to spill the beans over the phone. They had a much greater chance of success in casting if they could get the women to come down to the auditions before they let them know it was X-rated. Back then, it was much more difficult to find women who would act in porn. Even prostitutes looked down their noses at porn stars. They valued secrecy in practicing their trade. They didn't want to see their faces 10 feet high on a movie screen or being plastered all over the sex magazines. I'm not interested, Carly said, but I think my husband would be. And she handed me the phone.
Mm.
Hello?
Hmm. Interesting.
Hmm.
And the rest
of
history.
My fantasy was to meet an X-rated woman.
Uh-huh.
I thought there was such a thing out there.
Yeah.
I'm off book now, by the way.
So Howie and I had the same motivation. Ladies.
That's right.
But when I met Howie, I thought I'd found my permanent screen husband and my adult Fred Astaire, but life took him in another direction. I only got to work with you like a couple of times, and then you were gone.
Well, he was gone.
And at least I got to work with him. I got to work with Howie for Candace.
That's right. And I just wanted to ask, how did you come to have an agent call your house in the first place?
We were doing straight acting in the Bay Area.
I see. Okay.
And these were straight, it was all just beginning in those days. So there wasn't a lot of separation between the two genres.
Yeah. Sorry, I wanted to ask that, Diana, but that was a great segue into the fact that I got Howie back in the business by offering him a film role where he could use condoms, but that's all I'm going to say. You can take it from there, Diana, whenever you want.
No, but that's pretty significant because Howie left the business because it was the beginnings of HIV, right?
November 10th, 1984,
mm-hmm.
the first headline in the San Francisco Chronicle of the heterosexual transmission of AIDS.
Mm-hmm.
I had three movies lined up for December, wanted to do them. A good friend of mine, who was a mathematician, came over to my house that day, said he had seen the numbers in the Chronicle. He did some projections. He said, you're in the wrong business at the wrong time. You need to retire. My wife heard his alarm, and she got alarmed. And I did not want to hear any of it. By this time, I had come up from the bottom to near the top, and I wasn't interested in losing my career. I went ahead and made the movies, and when I came home a month later, I got in bed with my wife and reached for her. We had a baby, and she was 8 months pregnant with a second one, and she said, do you think we should? And I looked at her, what? She said, and I'll quote you verbatim, she said, don't you think it would be prudent if one of us remained alive to raise the kids?
And well, that put it all in perspective, didn't it?
That was a brick wall for
me. There is no arguing with Carly. Carly has the grip of logic firmly grasped in her hand, and there is just no talking back to it. I've met Carly. She is formidable.
That helps
and
when you're
smart,
in love with
too. Like, you know, that's some logic you really sort of can't assail.
But, Candace, you offered Richard Pacheco a part. Was it in Sensual Escape, or which one was it?
It was.
Yes.
It was Sensual Escape, and I've always been very proud to point out that Femme Productions, my company, was the very first company to start using safer sex.
Mm-hmm.
And it was many, 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 many years after that that the rest of the adult industry even, you know, occasionally let the actors and actresses use condoms, mostly not, but I just felt that it was important to protect my talent. It was important to set an example. And for the viewers, the only time I made it an exception is when they were an actual couple and monogamous, or if they really argued, you know, and didn't want to use safe sex and they liked working together and they trusted the other partner. We did also, of course, everyone had to be tested, but the great thing was that we were casting for Sensual Escape, and I don't remember who, I think maybe it was you, Nina, who said that you and Howie always wanted to work together, and you lost the opportunity when he had to leave because of safe sex, and you were so thrilled that maybe he would come back if we told him that he could use condoms. Is that, do you remember
that's the same way? That's how I remember it as well.
Yeah.
Well, let me set the historical context a little bit. When I quit the business in the beginning of 1985, there was no such thing as safe sex. It was an entire year before that term came into play.
Right.
And during that year, we didn't know. I remember having Nina, we went through many arguments with each other about whether it was safe or not. And it ended up saying, well, I can see you erring on the side of caution. You've got new babies and your wife who is nagging at you to get out of it. But you didn't perceive a threat to your physical being from the evidence that you had analyzed up to that date. A year later, however, they did develop some information. Safe sex came into the lexicon. Use of a latex condom and no exchange of bodily fluids would protect us from communicating or receiving the disease. And that's when I tried to resume my career. I lasted four movies, and the first of which was Sensual Escape. And let me just say, Candida, I was so honored to be in your movie. For 10 years, I labored amongst some Neanderthal fellow colleagues, thinking the only way this is ever really going to change is when women get some power in this game, because it was all toys for boys. And there was no reality to the sex going on at all. I looked to the women's movement to be the lever to change the quality of sexual materials, and the women's movement made a severe right turn into anti-sex period. Or the only sex that they were doing, they weren't talking about, which was, I guess, lesbian sex. And men were like, it reminded me of the days of the civil rights movement when you'd say to your black friend, what can I do to help? And he'd say, you can die.
Right.
Oh, well, there's a good idea. I'll get right on that. But anyhow, here was you and Gloria Leonard and the people you had been involved with Club 90, and an award-winning, powerful group of women got together and started trying to take the reins into their own hands about how to make something more equitable out of this mess we were in. So, bravo, and it was my honor to be there.
Yeah.
And Nina, you're my sister, So,
oh, and you describe all of this very well, Howie, and with humor in your book, Hindsight, True Love and Mischief in the Golden Age of Porn. I think that the female actors really always liked you because you respect women and you value them. And am I right, ladies, that you always liked him for that?
Oh, no. Howie is, especially back then, I don't know about you, Candace, but he was the only man in the business with feminist perspective, understanding, awareness, language,
yes,
vocabulary, attitude, and behavior of any of them.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the guys were nice enough, but you wouldn't want to hang out with them. And Howie, you want to hang out with and talk because he can talk about other things, like, you know,
exactly,
art and culture and history and stuff.
Yeah.
So Howie was always an outlier in this business.
Mm-hmm.
Which is
why
I am too, which is why I recognize him. It's like, wait, don't go, although I understand why you must.
Well, all three of you are outliers.
Yeah.
All three.
So.
And
Candace was the first one. She was really, she kicked the door open with the being a female producer director, and the first 3 years they laughed at her, they pointed, they snarked, and then they stole her idea out from under her because, oh wait, there's
well,
money there. It was just,
I kept
it was
waiting. They tried. You know, it was there were a lot of naysayers like, oh, don't
oh my
be
God.
Ridiculous. You know, there's no such thing. Women aren't
no
interested.
Such thing. Yeah.
And, you know, and I just knew they were wrong, and it got me going all the more. But
well, they were worse than naysayers,
then,
if you'll let me interrupt you a minute. I'm thinking of Gail Palmer when they took a beautiful young woman and put her out front and pretended that she was directing and writing these movies, and
right,
she was doing nothing of the kind.
When
I was in Playgirl, which was purported to be the voice of young women,
yes,
the publisher was a man, and he hired a young woman to be the editor and pretend that she was the power. I mean, it's got pretty insidious out there.
And what was so frustrating is that I had a whole bunch of women against pornography activists accusing me of that very thing. And it was just infuriating, you know, because
I really was
the real deal. But they couldn't handle that. They didn't want to believe it.
Right. And 30 years later, they still don't believe it.
Yeah, well, you know, they were left in the dust anyway. The movement died. They meant well, and, you know, at least you can't, once the genie's out of the box, you can't stop something.
No. No, it's an idea which time had come.
Yeah.
Because once you get the little box in the home and you can be private about it, then lots of women who would never have gone to a theater, or a peep show, it's like, mm-hmm, honey, what you bringing home today, sweetheart? I'll get the negligee, send the kids to grandma's. And so it really did. I think home pornography helped as many marriages as it may have hurt, if not more.
I'm sure
that Candace and I get lots of letters saying thank you
for
this scene, this movie, this thing. It's just helped the conversation, helped the spark, got us back in love. I mean, and that just makes it all worthwhile.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm very proud of my association with the sexology industry, and as Diana well knows, because that's how you and I met, Diana, was through my involvement, having been invited to speak the first time in 1988 by then-President Dr. Sandra Cole, who called on me to come and speak before the national meeting of ASET, the American Association of Sex Educators, Counselors, and Therapists. And she went on to tell me that she felt that I was in the wrong business, that I should be associated with the sexology community, and that I was, in her opinion, not making porn films. I was making what could be called erotica. And I was just so bowled over by the support and the warmth and the invitation into that whole group, that whole network, that it really meant a lot to me. It was just wonderful.
I remember Sandra Cole, and she's not on the scene as much anymore, but a great woman. And the two of you talked about how your films, Candace, could subtly educate men to please a woman.
Yeah, that's right.
Lots of men need instruction about that, to really please a woman. Nina Hartley, I know you've said about your instructional videos that I want for people to have more pleasure. Yes. And to be more competent.
Part of pleasure is a skill set. It's part of the emotional skill set. There's an interpersonal skill set. There's an intellectual skill set. There's also a physical skill set. How do you touch a nipple? How do you transmit my intention so that you feel what I hope to inspire in you as opposed to something
mm-hmm.
else? And even my regular porno movies, the silly ones, I always, always, always knew that people were going to be watching because our culture does such a bad job of sex education. People are reduced to looking at entertainment media for information about sex, which is a different conversation and topic. But I always made sure to show that I was having a really fun, good time, and I like doing what I'm doing, and so it helps women watch my movies without feeling weird. It helps
right.
men watch my movies, and if you actually copied what I did, you actually might have a good chance. And I always kept my nails short. In the 80s, there were four women with short nails. There was myself, Sharon Mitchell, Sharon Kane, and Erica Boyer. And all the other women in the 80s had these long acrylic nails, and those were always the ones on their backs because I'm not letting anybody with those nails play with my lady bits.
Indeed.
No, and actually now I talk to lesbians who are currently in their 40s and 50s, and they say, and they in the 80s were trying to find material that spoke to them before the queer porno movement came along. And so I have lesbian fans who watched the big hair 80s movies because they knew that they could tell I really liked women, for real. And that was always, again, gratifying when you can get women to recognize that, hey, you're not so bad. This isn't so bad.
And your website is a lot of fun, nina.com. And
yes.
lots of girl-on-girl scenes
oh,
there.
Oh, lots.
Lots.
Lots. And I will talk directly to the camera about what I'm doing, too. So, I mean, I never leave you in the dark. You know, what am I doing with my fingers inside? I'll tell you.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, also, Diana, you mentioned that it was a lot about teaching men what women like, how to touch women. But it was also, I think, almost at least equally, if not more important, and leaning toward what Nina was saying, getting women to feel comfortable about
yes.
their sexuality. And this is where I felt my book also did, that was the main thrust of my book,
yes.
was getting women to understand their own sexuality, become familiar with it, accept themselves and their own unique desires, and then learn how to ask and communicate their needs.
Yeah,
because that is one of the biggest problems and I realized that I had that problem. And that I was afraid to speak up and tell a guy what I wanted in life.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh my gosh, if I'm having a problem with that, think how many women must be suffering from this inhibition.
And
that's and
men
really
as well.
What I said.
Men have the same problem too.
Men have the same problem, you're saying?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they're
yeah.
supposed to know
you're
everything
right.
already, right? Because I'm
talking
supposed to be...
about their own pleasure. They
right.
have all the same fears and anxieties
right.
and insecurities that women
not,
have
but,
in terms of presenting their true desire.
But men aren't allowed to express those because you're supposed to know somehow exactly how this all works somehow.
Well, that's 19th century.
Yeah, it's even worse because guys are supposed to be this big know-it-alls, you know, oh, you know, don't worry, man knows exactly what you want
right,
and need.
Right,
and
right.
the poor guys get there and they're supposed to be, you know, the great teacher, and they can't even speak up about their own needs, let alone
yeah,
that's
what
right.
a woman
a house
wants.
Of cards.
Yeah.
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 And there's another piece of this for you, Howie, because you described this a lot in your book, your erection difficulties. But it was good for people to see that the guy isn't a nonstop piston, that he's human like anyone else. And
yeah, but it was hard in those movies, in the traditional porn, Diana.
Oh
when
my
a
God.
Guy couldn't get it up. It
oh
was
my God, for
men.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
it was huge for, or not so huge for you, Howie.
Season ticket to therapy.
No, it really is bad because the teasing from the other guys, but the on a good day you get someone like me or Candace will be as helpful as we're able to be,
mm-hmm.
you know, and give you good vibes and, you know, we'll tickle your scrotum, we'll nibble your earlobe, what do you need? And then on other days you get women who are like, ah, well, it's yours, you know, when you're ready, let me know. And they sit there and they file their nails. So not only is everybody waiting on you for lunch, your partner is exhibiting no interest in you at all and no compassion and no understanding and awareness. And and you're just out there all alone. And then if it gets really bad, they turn off the lights and leave the room.
Yeah, it's terrible. And as
you know,
as,
and it's dreadful.
As Howie and I know, our we won't talk about it unless you want to, Howie. But you know, Howie.
I made a career of talking about it.
Yeah, well, one of Howie's early experiences was with me as an actress in a perfectly silly movie, Hot and Saucy Pizza Girls. And you know, even after having a so-called kind of little rehearsal session, you know, the poor guy had John, the great John Holmes, standing by staring trying to perform. And, you know, not only couldn't he do it, then the guy they called in to stand in for him, which was horrible, they were just, you know, me, the actress, I'm supposed to just let any guy come in and do
and
stuff
for you.
To me now.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that guy couldn't do it. He was intimidated.
Oh my God.
It was just an agonizing experience. And
oh my gosh.
I did a stand-up bit about it that's hilarious. You know, but really, it was very painful. It was for poor Howie, and it was horrible for me. I felt totally like, oh, my God, am I not hot? I'm not pretty.
Right.
He doesn't like me. Now
right.
this guy can't. It was humiliating and exhausting and awful.
You're a beauty, too, so it wasn't you. It was them, just so you know, Candace.
Well, look,
an interesting point that you raise, because as a man, when you're in that place where you're not happening, poor women that were in this movie, so many of them were 18 and 19 years old, and when you didn't get hard, they start crying because it's their fault. They're not hot enough. So not only are you dealing with your own damaged psyche, now you've got to calm down a girl and try to educate her that's got nothing to do with you at all. Please. Relax and stop crying, and maybe we have a chance.
Right. No, oh, my God.
And, you know, it's so terrible because what I do in my femme movies is the opposite. You know, it's a shame it wasn't one of my movies, Howie, because I just treat it like any other experience. Like, oh, you can't get an erection? So, okay, we'll do other things.
We'll just do something else,
You know, have oral sex, use your fingers and hands, do whatever. I don't do that bit, okay, you know, turn off the lights, we're going to leave, call us when you're ready. I don't do that. I'm like, and plus the psychology of just letting the guy off the hook, sometimes he can end up getting an erection because there's not that pressure on him. But if he can't, I really, that's fine. We'll do other things.
And precisely why I give Sensate Focus homework to my couples, where there's lots of touching, but for the first week, the female breasts are not allowed to be touched, and intercourse is off the table. So then that enables everybody to get a little more comfortable with other erogenous zones. And and when there isn't that pressure, it makes a huge difference.
Right. That's right.
I have mixed emotions at this stage of my life when I think back to those experiences. I didn't experience those things in my private life. I experienced them all on the movie sets. But I kind of become enamored of the pre-Viagra, pre-Cialis, pre-Levitra days, because what you had there was God's lie detector at work.
Yeah.
You were either there or you weren't there. And that's good information, because men are already alienated enough from their feelings to be able to pop a pill or get a shot and have an erection that's got nothing to do with your real state of being.
Yeah. Well, the pills
that just
don't
further
help.
Alienates
men
from themselves. I don't think that's a very positive development there.
The people, certainly the shots make your penis work whether you care about it or not, but the pills don't work. The pills cannot overcome shy dick syndrome.
That's true.
you see a poor young man struggling on camera, you know, with a red face and a you know, apparently non-working penis, that means he's trying to use pills to overcome his own emotional resistance to being there, which doesn't work. And I do want to tell those young men, just go and try to do something else with your life, because it really is humiliating after a while. And although when Viagra first came out for camera work, in the beginning, the first couple of years, I was very against it because I prided myself on making a safe environment for my partner and having a real connection. And then after a couple of years, I realized, wait a minute, if that gives him the confidence that it's going to work, then he can look me in the eye instead of at my ear and count backward from 100. And so I don't know which of my partners does or does not do or not use enhancements of that nature, but if he's confident enough that his penis will work in the way it's supposed to work for this kind of movie, and he can lift his head up and have some interaction with me, I no longer resent the fact of the pill, because you know, it may be my first scene in 10 days, it may be his fifth scene that week, and so I've made my peace.
I think that's wise on your part.
Yeah, if you don't make peace with it, then, again, I still like my work overall, so yay.
So
you know,
we are about to,
go ahead.
We're about to go to the half-hour break, and listeners, I know you are impressed because I have with me articulate, historic people, also present-day people, but really the three of you are... And the trajectories your lives, respective lives, have taken are very impressive. I think it's wonderful that we're having this conversation. We need to have more of these sorts of conversations because sex, it's just sex, but lots of people attach so much shame to it and guilt, and I see it all the time in my practice. So we're going to come back and talk about what's going on a little more in your respective lives now. So stay with us, and we'll be right back. We are back. This is Dr. Diana Wiley here with Candida Royale, Nina Hartley, and Richard Pacheco. And I'm going to open this last segment with a quote from Howie Richards' book, Hindsight. When sex is accepted and celebrated for the goodie that it is and can be in this life, it takes on a much less obsessive place than when it is denied, vilified, or repressed. Hear, hear.
Hear, hear.
Yeah. And Nina, you kind of coattail on that by you're saying sex is my subject as an artist, activist, scientist, and healer. And maybe you could start this segment off, Nina, and expand on that a little.
Well, I have my training as a nurse, and I went to nursing school to become a nurse midwife. And it dawned on me that sex and babies are related, and that people, including myself at the time, were very wounded around sexuality. And when I was learning to accept the fact that objectification is not some evil thing that men do to women, but objectification is what mammals do with each other sexually, you know, why do rams have such big horns? Because chicks dig it. Why do Quetzalcoatls have those tails? Because chicks dig it. And so I realized that men and women are equally but differently wounded around sexuality. And I've always, the shorthand is women are amputated from their clits and men are amputated from their hearts due to social pressure. And the goal of sexual repression, of course, is social control and social cohesion and personal control. And so men have been raised and to believe that women are their enemy, and women have been raised to believe that men are their enemy, which is really sad because most people are heterosexual and they need the so-called opposite sex to build families and be happy and whole. And yet if I suspect, you know, your sexual motivation to me, that yet I need a man's attention, yet I suspect him and I hate the fact that I need him because what kind of feminist am I that I want to be penetrated? I hate Andrea Dworkin. She's done more harm than good in my view, and I'm not sorry that she has passed on. And so the people I work with have been sexually harmed in by our culture. The people that consume my product come to me with their sexual pain and distress. And it all starts in the body. And so for me, as a healer, you know, if you're going to be a good midwife, you just help the woman into her body and just trust that the process that's been going on for a long time will work this time. And you take as long as it takes. We'll walk, we'll chant, we'll put you in the tub, we'll put you in the shower. We're just going to be here until the baby comes. And you can do this because your body can do this. And with people and pleasure, we have to help reorient each person's individual relationship to pleasure. But it's great because every person with a body can do this work because your body, any person's body, will never take them to the wrong place. Your body will take you to your best place, and this person's body will take them to their best place once they have been taught how to calm down, breathe, and tune into their body and reorient themselves to pleasure, absent the training from their childhood. And everybody can do this work. And it take and you can do it as fast as you want or as slow as you want, in little bits and pieces, whole immersion weekends, whatever you want. It's wonderful because our body are always with us, our genitals are always with us, and we learn that connection, we can take ourselves where we need to go.
Beautifully stated. Candace, you had some negative experiences with Andrea Dworkin as well, didn't you?
Well, I, as we broached earlier, was seen as a traitor of sorts.
Yeah.
I had been an active woman's liber in the 70s, early
mm-hmm.
70s when I was in college, and I even questioned myself, like, oh my gosh, you know, can I still consider myself a feminist? What have I done? And I really did come to terms with that, and I think it's very important to let women know that they have every right to their own personal pleasure, and
yes.
So I was, when I set out to do femme, and there was so much negative things said about me through the anti-porn feminists.
Oh,
by
God,
the way, I do want to jump in and say also that when I was in the movement back then, personal pleasure was very much part of one of our issues, that
yeah.
women did deserve sexual pleasure. It was not an anti-sex or anti-men.
No, I know.
It became that, unfortunately, because the radical lesbian factions and the anti-porn
mm-hmm.
factions. But it really didn't start out that way. But that said, I began to get, you know, disparaged by these groups, and I kind of took the bulls by the horns, so to speak, because at one point, after I made about three movies, I decided to confront them, and I contacted Florence Rush, the late Florence Rush, who was very active in radical women's movement and anti-porn, and invited, at the time, she was with the New York State chapter of NOW, National Organization for Women, and I invited Florence Rush and a few other women to come to my home and to view one of my movies, and so that they could see for themselves. I felt that I should be getting more support from the feminist movement.
Mm-hmm.
And they all came over. They were served refreshments by my adorable, at the time, Swedish husband. And I showed them a piece of a movie that featured Jamie Gillis that was pretty hardcore, just typical porn. And then I put on Christine's Secret, my third and very sweet, lovely, set in nature movie. And
mm-hmm.
They watched the entire thing. And then when it was over, they were pleasantly surprised. They were almost speechless. And I remember Florence Rush saying, you know, this really is different, but, and this is what horrified me then, can it be safe for women to express their sexual desire and fantasies in a world that's still so dangerous to them? And I was horrified by this because
yeah.
it was a way of still promoting this notion that it's because of women's sexuality that these things happen to them. This is
yes.
the message that she's insidiously sending out. And I thought that was very sad and very troubling. Just to conclude this, I feel that my work has spoken for itself. The women have spoken. And I'm really not bothered at all by the Andrea Dworkins or the Catherine McKinnons of the world, because really, in the end, women will speak up and make the decisions themselves.
Yeah.
So let's get our one male on the panel to weigh in on this. Howie?
Well, oddly enough, I have a slightly different take on Andrea Dworkin. This is ancient history from my memory banks, but I remember learning her story years ago. And if you look at what happened to her as a young
yes,
woman,
this is true.
She doesn't deserve our hate. She was broken, and men broke her. That doesn't make all men bad. And it certainly doesn't justify shutting down her ability to heal and perhaps move along. But she was treated horribly, and she deserves our sympathy and mm-hmm. all the healing we could have given her. I think it was the great sadness of her life that she got famous for being this force of rage, because then she wasn't permitted to move on from it. She never got to heal. She had to keep being that person, because that person was now making money and being a star being that person.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt sorry.
If she wanted to heal her rage, Howie, she could have done that. I mean, and her rage, I mean, which she had every right to, because her life was indeed horrible. But as for an angry, abused, lesbian-identified person to have such sway over generations of heterosexual thinking has done more damage than good, in my view. She did have some points to make as an outsider to the culture, as an outsider to, you know, normal male-female relationships. She did have some insight. But
I'm with you there 100%. I understand
that. She colored so much, and she has made a lot of heterosexual women terribly guilty over the desire for men. Like Candace, I thought for 2 years before I did my first stripping, can I be a feminist and be a sexual entertainer? Because I recognize that, politically speaking, the two seem to be anti-theatrical. But like Candace, I know my body, my rules, I have a right to my pleasure, and my pleasure included exhibitionistic performance for a consenting audience. And I just, you know, working and McKinnon could never, Candace and I tried for years to speak directly to them. No, hey, we're feminists, and we have been in this world, and we actually have some factual, experiential things to share with you about our experiences. And they would wave us off. You don't really exist. You know,
and they refused to
hear our experience. So, you know, speaking truth to power, so Candace and I speaking our truth, and they're going, no, you're special, you're privileged, oh, you're not like the other women, your stories don't count. And after a while, it was just enraging.
Right.
And the McDworkinite attitude has firmly entrenched itself in academia, which is very troubling. There's some younger academics who are pushing against it, but it's still, you know, everyone knows, if you're a feminist, everyone knows porn is bad, just blanket bad, and that is still the primary, the knee-jerk reaction that you're going to get from people. That's probably icky. And
I just wanted to jump in also, Nina, just to say, elaborate a tiny bit more, that what Howie is saying is, and that was explained to me, by psychologists, is that when you have been the victim of rape and abuse, what happens is that whenever you're confronted with a sexual image, it triggers the memory in a very feeling way.
And so...
You know, someone like Andrea Dworkin, unfortunately, it was almost like she couldn't control the reaction she had. It triggered that very feeling and experience when she would see these images. Unfortunately, I think both opinions are true. Unfortunately, she took her personal trauma and turned it into a movement of sorts, and had a tremendous influence on a generation of women, and that's the unfortunate part.
Well, the betrayal of humanity, not just women, that they were responsible for. I don't care if they end up hating men. What kind of sex do you like? They never answered that question.
Right.
Exactly.
Well, the only politically correct penis is the limp one, and the whole idea that there's. What really got me to disagree with them early on, and honestly, Ms. Dworkin, there is something called therapy, and you can handle your rage, you can learn to be less triggered. You're in New York, lots of therapists in New York. But when I was first trying to figure out, could I be a feminist and a sex entertainer, and then the whole political thing about, well, you know, penetration is the patriarchal colonization of women's bodies, blah, 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 blah. And it just made no sense to me, because there are nerve endings that are responsible for my pleasure that could only be stimulated with penetration of a penis, a finger, or a toy. And that's just nerve endings talking. It's not about politics. It's about, well, if I'm going to have my orgasm, I need internal stimulation, because that's where my pelvic nerves are. You know, the pudendal nerves are for the external genitals, yay. And then the pelvic nerves innervate the internal genitalia for that lovely combination orgasm that women are so capable of having, men too, actually. So the idea that penetration is somehow political
incorrect. But they made it political.
I know, and that's
the unfortunate thing, is that suddenly politics entered the bedroom. And I've tried to maintain, politics do not belong in the bedroom.
You have to
leave them outside the bedroom door, or you will never be able to enjoy sex.
And McKinnon always had a relationship going on with a man on the side. She's the one I really didn't understand.
And a man that was not particularly good to her either.
But you see, that's what it, I always say that, you know, people who come out like, oh, you know, so a lot of people who are all about like love, 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 they're the ones who really don't know how to live a life of just love. It's that they want to. And so often these women who are so adamant that heterosexual sex inherently is bad, are what they're really upset about, probably, some of them at least, is the fact that they love heterosexual sex, and they can't justify it. They can't make peace with it.
But they did come up with a great slogan.
It's politically wrong.
Do you remember the slogan? A woman without a man is like a fish without a bicycle. That's great.
And if you're lesbian, fine, but if you're heterosexual, which most people are, we're going to, you know, even if we say 80% of people are heterosexual, that's 80% of people, 80% of women who wish to have a sexual, passionate, loving relationship with a man person.
Yeah.
And if I've been trained to hate man people and hate my desire for man people, that just puts me in a very discomforting situation. How am I going to reconcile that? And all those nice man people out there who are wondering why I'm not being a jerk, why am I having such difficulty with women people? So the questions that the 70s feminists brought up were certainly necessary about pay and equal. Betty Friedan talked about it, actually. She warned against this dangerous preoccupation with dirty pictures and away from workplace equality and women in politics and women in the workplace and those kinds of things. She thought economics were much more important for women's equality than whether or not dirty pictures, because in the parts of the world where dirty pictures are allowed to exist, whether we like it or not, women have more political and social and economic freedom than in places where those kind of things are censored, because we know when censorship happens, access to women's health information is censored and access to LGBTQ information is censored, all because women need protection somehow. You know, on one hand, yes, they had a point, but it just metastasized into the hatred we see today between the pro-censorship feminists and the anti-censorship feminists, which Candace and Howie and I both all got blasted with in about the mid-80s. And that split has not been healed since.
Can I just tell a kind of a little funny story, Ad? Maybe it'll take us out of this serious
And after you tell your funny story, because time is coming up to the top of the hour and we have to stop a couple of minutes before, I really want you to talk about your books and how people can get them and your websites, and because this has been just a fascinating discussion. Tell your funny story, Candace.
Well, no, that's okay.
I want to hear it.
It's kind of sad and funny at the same time. But when I was in the movement, we had a faction that was all women, Women's Lib, and then there was another, like a co-ed faction. And I found out, you know, I was just blossoming. I was turning into a curvaceous, lovely young woman. I didn't really know it at the time.
Right.
And I, you know, I used to wear the uniform then of bell-bottom jeans and leotard tops, and so that it kind of, no bra, no makeup. I didn't even shave at the time, you know, and that was pretty much the uniform then. But apparently, you know, it was a body hugging uniform nonetheless.
Right, and you were beautiful. You're beautiful. You're beautiful now, but you were gorgeous at 21.
Oh well, thank you. And, you know, and I didn't even wear any makeup. I wasn't trying to look sexy per se. It's just, but you know, we're young and just discovering sex. You can't help but be beautiful back then. But I remember I found out and was informed that the men in the co-ed group were complaining about me. They were upset because I looked too sexy. And
I
think back on that and I think, those poor young men, they're flooded with these hormones, and they're made to feel guilty about desiring me, to the point where I then become the bad girl because I look desirable.
It's like
how twisted things were becoming.
It's like the Middle East, you know, covering women because the Orthodox Jews somehow. My appearance is responsible for your behavior.
Yeah,
seriously.
It's your fault. You look desirable. How dare you?
Right.
Cover this woman up. And we won't feel so guilty.
Yeah. And I still say today I feel bad because, you know,
however gentlemanly I would like my male partner to be in the public sphere, when it comes down to being alone, I would like more, you know, I like some yang to come out. And so if he's all guilty yeah. about having any yang, that makes for a very, very low energy coupling, because I want to be all yin and I want him to be all yang. And if he's all uncomfortable with being yang, then what are we doing? We're going to play Parcheesi again.
Okay, well, so exactly. So you know what? I'm going to jump in and just say very quickly so that you guys can talk about your book. My book is How to Tell a Naked Man What to Do, Sex Advice from a Woman Who Knows. It's a playful take on the fact that I'm a director and I direct men, naked men, what to do. But it really is, it's laid out kind of like making a movie. It, as I said earlier, it helps. My aim in the book is to help women get in touch with their own unique sexuality, accept it, and learn how to get their needs met. I think it's a wonderful book. I'm currently beginning work on my personal memoirs, a more personal book now, but you can get it by going to my website, CandidaRoyale.com, and that's two L's and an E, and there's a link right to Amazon from there, and so you can just get my book, or you can go right to Amazon, but it's great if you go through my website, because I get a few dollars that way. and so that's it. How to Tell a Naked Man What to Do. Go to CandidaRoyale.com and go right to Amazon.
It is a wonderful book.
Thank you, Diana.
It has helped any number of my clients. And I was telling you off the air that I brought it out and decided to reread it. And I think it first came out in 2004 or 6,
right,
maybe?
Yeah. In the hardcover and then soft cover 2 years later.
Right. But and rereading it is just, it's a great experience.
It holds up well.
It does hold up well. Nicely put, Nina. So let's, girls first. So we'll let Nina talk about her book and then Howie, I mean, you were on my show for 2 times in a row the end of last month, so we want you to talk about Hindsight, too. So, Nina, your book.
My book is Nina Hartley's Guide to Total Sex, which is a companion volume to my Adam and Eve sex education series. Penguin Freaked Out, so it's all words, no pictures. It's a, you know, half how to, half why to. Sex. Most of the chapters involve just one or two people, and there are 3 chapters specifically devoted to more than 2 people in the room at the same time. And I've gotten really good feedback on it from women and couples, so I'm very proud of it. And it is from Avery Press, 2006, but you can also get it on Amazon. Or more importantly, have your local independent bookstore order it for you.
Good. Excellent. And this makes me think of what Playboy said about you, Nina Hartley, that you're the smartest woman in porn.
So they say. If I'm smart, why aren't I rich?
You know, I want to go to Howie next. I can remember, and this must go back about 15 years, reading in Playboy what you said about you were advising men not to be with a woman who did not masturbate because she didn't know her own body. I thought that made so much sense.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's really important because, you know, again, I'm sure Candace gets this too, you know, or, you know, people upset. I cannot give my partner an orgasm. My partner didn't give me an orgasm, and it's like, it's not their partner's job to give you anything. It's your job to know what it is you like and then inform your partner how they may help you. So ladies, masturbate.
Yes, it's good. It's a good thing to do, and plus it's fun. It can be fun. All right. Howie, your book, Hindsight, True Love and Mischief in the Golden Age of Porn.
Nina,
and the forward is by Whoopi Goldberg, which is
really cool.
Yeah.
Nina, you're ready to run for governor of California.
Moi?
Yeah, I think you're ready.
Okay.
That said, here's my book. It's called Hindsight. I'm going to read you one page. What's the matter, God asked. What happened? I'm stuck, I told God. So get unstuck, he said. In the end, I told him, it all just sounds like ain't I great, ain't I special. I don't want to write that anymore. You're not at the end, he said. You're barely past the beginning. You know what you've just discovered? Vanity of vanities, all is vanity, and now you're depressed. That's happened to a lot of people. Didn't Shakespeare write that? No, no, it was Ecclesiastes a long time ago. We were quiet for a while. You know what I like about you, God asked? No, what? On your desk, he said, you took this little toy dog. It was a plastic Pluto doll from Disneyland. It was made with its tongue sticking out like it was licking something. You took that Pluto doll, and you made a real-looking cock and balls for it. Yeah, you put a small screw right into the dog's missing genital area, and then you use some plastic clay to sculpt his brand-new cock and balls right over that screw. I watched you do it. That was fucking genius. I mean, I was doing stuff like that in Genesis. And then you put that dog with his little erect penis and his tongue sticking out, you put it right behind a small sculpture of a buxom, trashy, hillbilly-type woman wearing extremely cut-off short jeans. She's bending over with her ass sticking out. You put the Pluto doll right behind her so it looks like Pluto is licking her ass. And she's got this completely stunned look on her face, you know? Like there's a cold, wet dog nose right up her ass. Now that's funny! And that's what you like about me, God? Son, the Lord moves in mysterious ways. Looky here, he said. God had clearly fallen into this whole country western thing. Who was I to stop him? This here job you're doing, your job is just to entertain the troops. Stop taking yourself so damn serious. Sex is one of the best things I'd done. I liked it so much, I gave it to all the plants and all the animals. It's all you people that are having so much trouble with it. I just want you to tell your story, son. You know, it just might help somebody out. Okay? Okay.
And you have told your story very well. Now tell our listeners how they can get Hindsight.
Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, my own website, which my daughter just made this afternoon.
Oh, no kidding.
Where the hell's my website? Hindsight Richard Pacheco. Facebook.com, Hindsight Richard Pacheco.
Well, terrific.
And can I just jump in and say that
please.
He is such a wonderful writer, and there are so many wonderful stories about the business. If anyone wants to know what it's really like from the male point of view, they're just great stories, really great stories, some very touching, just some funny. You're a great writer, really,
Thank
Howard.
You.
And I think that you should next write a kind of a how-to book for men. I think you'd be the perfect guy for it.
Hey, good advice, Howie.
Yes.
We need to stop because I hear the music. This has been just a wonderful panel. I'm hoping you'll all three of you agree to do a part two. And
Absolutely.
We can talk about that off the air. But there's so much here. So I want to thank you all very much.